Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
I'm slightly red of face. I was playing soccer yesterday and the sun was blazing. September is going out with a roar. That's not...
Why? What do you mean?
Hold on. Summer is going out with a roar.
Oh, okay.
I thought it'd be more fally. Last week suggested it'd be a bit more fally.
Well, it's like 70 today. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's about right for mid-September, isn't it?
I suppose so.
Yeah. All right. This is very fun and eventful.
Weather talk.
What a show we have coming up for you today on a Monday. Immediate reaction to what was really... How can I put this without being overly hyperbolic?
Oh, let me do the Sky Sports on it for you. Seismic September.
Well, to me, it felt like... one of the more eventful weekends that we've had in a while, dating back to last season.
Oh, don't be that.
Because, come on, you said all of last year that the Tuttle race was so boring because of its predictability. Well, this is one of the first.
It's a new season, though. We got to gap it, Andrew.
Since Newcastle defeated Manchester City last year.
Right.
This has been probably the first moment of, oh.
Yes. Oh, yeah. But we're not going to be the people who, it's now on vogue to run seasons in together. And I don't really like it because transfers come in the summer, players go out, things change.
Manchester City, by and large, are the same as what they were a year ago.
Well, according to your rundown, they're not. But anyway, we'll get to that.
What did I write? I don't even remember what I wrote. It was very late. We do have a lot more aside from just that to talk about. Arsenal, I mean, not all draws are created equal.
Created is a good term. Because that was creating your own misfortune.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Spurs' bounce back performance. And then, JJ, we're going to go in the club. We haven't gone in the club in quite some time. But with the league back, we thought it was a good time. And we're going to do so. A lot of people are going to be happy when I say what I'm about to say.
We're probably going in the dug.
There's a lot of people who listen to this podcast that probably feel like we don't give Everton quite enough airtime. But you're going to get it today.
Our friend Doug, I think of him regularly when things go wrong for Everton.
Yeah, so we'll go in the club with Everton. Greg O'Keefe of The Athletic and the All Together Now podcast. He'll be joining us in mere moments. And this is a Champions League week and not a Champions League qualification week, like an actual Champions League week. So the draw happened like right after we had done a show. So we were like, I don't know, we never really actually gave a full preview.
We never mentioned it. But to be fair, there's the groups. Speculate on them all you want, but nothing matters until the first game.
Come on. That's what we do, though.
Well, I've got some thoughts.
We were bereft in our duties. Admit it.
Well, I've got a...
You failed the people.
I've got a theory that maybe Champions League group stages don't even matter. There you go.
Well, they'll matter for the clubs that don't qualify for the knockout stages.
Yeah, I have some thoughts.
Unless you crave Europa League football. And then what to watch for, which is kind of heavily Champions League based. So we'll do all that. Let's start though, JJ, with what we were just referencing, and that is Manchester City losing to Norwich City. And I think there's a lot of people that saw that maybe weren't watching the games or just kind of monitoring on their phone that had to do like a double take, triple take, quadruple take when they saw the scoreline of that. Norwich City defeats Manchester City.
A Norwich that had been bedeviled by injuries prior to the game. 11 first-team players not available. First-team squad players not available.
I believe it was 9 members of their championship side that were featured in this 11.
Yes, this is very much a throwback team. And then, of course, the stats beforehand. 6 million spent on the 11 that played. 6 million in total, whereas 400 million, almost half a billion spent on that Manchester City team. And yet, it's an unbelievable day. That is the biggest day Norwich have had since the heady days of 92 and 93 when they were actually in Europe, finishing third in the league and beating Inter Milan. The noise, everything. Norwich fans have not seen that since.
Well, and I think what was so exciting about it, if you're a Norwich fan, isn't just that you beat Manchester City. It's also the way in which they did it.
Yeah.
Like, this was not a... let's just sit back and defend like our lives depend on it. And then, oh, wait a minute, a counterattack just exploded in front of us and we just scored. Like, and now let's hang on to a 1-0 win. This was like a pretty competent job in attacking football against what we thought was the best club in the league.
Yeah, those who are acolytes of Daniel Farkin have been talking about him for a long time as a very good manager will be very, very pleasantly pleased with what happened. But I hate to do this. I hate to do it, Norwich. As good as you were, every single one of those goals, it came through your endeavour, don't get me wrong, but it was the waiter coming down the stairs with the beers. Calamity Otamendi once again. I mean, every single goal was a mistake. From the corner kick on the first goal, Andrew, they were so static. It was zonal, I get it. But Ederson even, like Lee Dixon said it in commentary, Ederson's got to realise there's only one place that can actually go. And he never moves. The next goal, Otamendi does a PlayStation player, jumps out of position. Walker, Kyle Walker's playing everybody on. And it's just a complete, there's no shape to the City defence. And of course, the coup de grace. The most beautiful moment in Manchester City. If you hate Manchester City, you enjoyed this so much.
You can't help but speak from the heart in these moments.
Actually, it's not about the Liverpool versus Manchester City thing for me. It comes from a much more smug place. Remember when we were doing our...
There's a right way to build a club and a wrong way. And JJ has decided...
No, not even that. Not even that. It goes to our Premier League previews. Where we were nitpicking. I was in the midst of the nits. And I was picking them all. Trying to find a weakness in this Manchester City team as we go into this season. And what I said was, if something goes wrong, if there's an injury at centre-back, they're in real bother. Lo and behold, Laporte's out.
Well, that's the thing. It's not just a injury. It's an injury to him. Because he is their best... certainly their best central defender.
Yes.
You could maybe, I know you mentioned Kyle Walker. You could have a conversation about who their best overall defender is. I think I might still say Laporte. And I think what we, again, I'm trying so hard to not speak in great hyperbole after something like this, but it's hard not to when Manchester City lose to Norwich City. I think what we're learning when you see something like this happen is that there's a difference between being the best player on a team and maybe the most important player in the team. Like, I wouldn't sit here and tell you that I think Aymeric Laporte is the best player on Manchester City.
Yeah.
But, like, what did we see a year ago? Kevin De Bruyne, who I believe him or Raheem Sterling probably are, or Aguero. Take your pick from one of those three. Like, Aguero went out last year and missed time, and City were fine. De Bruyne went out and missed time, and that's when we said, okay, now City are going to be tested. And they were fine. But Aymeric Laporte going out with a serious injury that won't see him back for months upon months... that is a problem, because now they are not fine, because now they are forcing guys who are just not clearly up to his quality to come in and do the job for them defensively, and now there's going to be problems.
This is from the BBC. Otamendi and Stones had featured together just 6 times at centre-back in Manchester City's previous 80 competitive games, but Guardiola insisted he has no concerns about playing them together. How is that? I know he's got to speak to the media. Oh. He's got to back his players. He made a decision on this pairing ages ago. Now, what I would have done at the weekend was, I'm not playing a midfield of Gundogan and Rodri in front of that back two. I'm going to play Fernandinho, centre-back probably, and play Rodri and someone else. Just do... But you can't put Stones and Otamendi together. You can't play Otamendi, based on the evidence of this weekend, based on... I hate saying this about a professional footballer. It's crazy, but if you look at the way he's played for Argentina, if you look at the way he's played for Manchester City... there is lots of evidence he's not a top-flight centre-half anymore.
But they're so thin there. I mean, I guess that's why you're saying move Fernandinho into a centre-back position.
Slot him in there.
I mean, we've even seen Kyle Walker at times.
In a back three.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to change formation in that manner. But something needs to be done. There's also something else, Andrew. Just, can I make a larger point about the new rule and its role in Norwich's third goal? So now you can receive the ball from a goal kick inside the 18. Mm-hmm. Right. So me and you said prior to the season, you're going to have to be creative and clever with this. You know, I can't wait to see all the things teams are going to do. But that doesn't mean you should do it every time. In fact, Jeff Goldblum, he has the best advice for centre halves from about 20 years ago.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think if they should.
I adore that man.
He's amazing, isn't he? Norwich, finds a way. Yeah, but the point is very true from Jeff. You're so preoccupied about doing it, you never asked if you should. What is the point in playing a pass like that?
Because it's in vogue.
Right, it's in vogue. I should also say, It probably applies more to Arsenal, who we'll get to. It doesn't matter what pass you play. If Otamendi is just going to literally stop in the middle of the play, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So
here was Steve Nicol on ESPN FC on Manchester City's problems at the back.
It shows you how important it is that you have a solid defence. You know, we said that City are not going to go away every second weekend and score 4 and 5 goals away from home. That's just not going to happen. There will be occasions when it might be one. And this game it was 2. But it wasn't enough because they are so bad defensively. So, listen, I wouldn't be surprised to see this happening again.
So bad defensively. I mean, look, it's hard to argue with him. The question is that he raises is, can they go on the road and outscore opponents? He says they're not going to do that every week. They've done it before. They will do it again. But I guess it just comes back to the margins. There's such small margins right now in this title race with Liverpool and Manchester City that, like, any sort of performance like what we just saw again moving forward, and it really could be it. I know I texted you yesterday and congratulated you on winning the league, and yep, you wanted none of it because that's just, you know, you're putting up walls.
Well, the last time you did that was in December of 2018, which was, I mean, even then it was early. Now it's September of 2019.
Yeah. No, you won yesterday.
You're outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. We did win, and we should mention that. I think...
No, the league, I mean.
No. We're going to talk about Liverpool's win very quickly. I think the contrast in the performance, Liverpool go 1-0 down, but you never thought they were going to lose that game. Few nervy moments. Firmino's... I mean, take, for example, you talk about the importance of players. If we lost Firmino, we have no chance of winning the league. I'll say that right now.
It's just like with Liverpool right now, I know you don't want to hear any of this, but like honestly, everything just comes up Liverpool. Like, Origi goes off injured, so now it means, oh, Firmino has to come on. And then he makes like the play of the day in the pass that sets up the goal that kind of seals it, and it's just like, even when things go wrong, they go right.
Yeah. But, I mean, for many years, I could say the absolute opposite. So it's just the way it works. And you need luck. You absolutely,
with you.
You need luck. And we were on about the luck index and how United were, or City were unlucky last season. I'll talk about how Liverpool were so lucky. I don't mind telling you that. But there was no luck this weekend. It was just, we beat Newcastle and Otamendi played.
Yep. Let's see. We continue now. Let's go on to Arsenal, JJ. They leave Vicarage Road extremely fortunate to pick up a point, and it's not often you say that when a team has a 2-goal lead at one point within that same game. Look, a lot of the things that we just said about Manchester City, we can repeat about Arsenal, and this is, you know, this has just like become so broken record, repetitive, and it kind of goes back to what we talked about with them in our preview shows, where, okay, signings like Nicolas Pepe are great. Like, you're going to be really fun and thrilling in attack, and you're going to score a lot of goals. But, like, you talk about a misallocation of resources. I mean, like, if David Luiz was ever supposed to have been the answer, then, like, no one can be surprised by what's happening right now.
What was the question, if he was the answer? By the way, we're in a loop here with Arsenal. I mean, we keep saying it. The previews, people talk to us about our predictions where Arsenal would finish, but it wasn't so much, oh, the boys got their league position wrong. It's more a general feeling we had about the club. And what do we keep saying? The goals they scored, like the Aubameyang goal was a beautiful goal.
Yeah.
Great move. Ceballos, by any measure, is a fantastic footballer to have at your club. The defenders you have are still bad defenders, and you have not addressed it. I don't know what else to say.
And what's more is, like, we're talking about Manchester City a moment ago, and while maybe there's poor central defense there, like, you can see a way in which they maybe can mask it, whether it's Rodri playing in that kind of shield role, or if they pair him up with Fernandinho, if they don't want to move Fernandinho totally into a center half role. Like, I know that there are Arsenal fans out there that love Granit Xhaka. I've seen statistics and metrics that are supposed to say that he's not as bad as you think. I'm sorry. He's terrible. He has become unplayable for me. And if he is supposed to be your shield to one of the most fragile back lines in the league, then this is what you get. Like, there can be no surprises here. And this is what it will be moving forward. So all the Arsenal fans that want to come forward on Twitter and defend him to me, go ahead. But, like, if he was wearing a Chelsea jersey doing the exact things that he's doing for you, you'd all be laughing at him.
I remember when Socrates signed, and I saw a few games because I hadn't really seen much of him, to be honest with you, even at Dortmund. I really hadn't. And straight away I thought, this is not an upgrade. This isn't an upgrade. And when you see that goal that they gave Watford to give them life in that game, again, it goes back to what Jeff Goldblum was saying about central defending. Like, you see the whole field when you have the ball like that. What are you doing? Like, Lee Dixon, we have some audio from Lee Dixon commenting on this and his exasperation with the club and with the game that he saw at the weekend from an ex-Arsenal player. You must listen to it.
Well, makes my job a lot easier when I'm talking about stuff and then they just do it straight in front of your eyes. Just mentioning how many times they're going to mess this up, and sure enough, the pictures tell you everything. Atrocious.
It's funny, JJ, because he's talking. That's right after the goal that was given away, playing out of the back. Like, think of the things that American fans say about Greg Berhalter when the U.S. does this in meaningless friendlies. Like, what are Arsenal fans saying about Unai Emery right now in games that like are of consequence
but again,
and significance?
Again, take back responsibility as a player. You've played this game for all your life, 20 years at a high level. You don't play a pass like that. You don't do it.
This is all part of a bigger conversation, this playing out of the back conversation, because you and I, we are doing this. It's a different club each week. One week it's Spurs,
right.
One week it's City, it's Arsenal.
One week it's the U.S. men's national team.
Right, like, what is going on in this sport right now? Is the benefit of playing, we have to have on an expert. Like a real expert who knows like the X's and O's of this. It's the benefit of playing out of the back truly that much greater, because all it takes, like players like Socrates, I almost feel bad for him because like mistakes do happen, but these guys are being put in a position in playing out from the back where if a mistake happens, you are immediately in a dire situation.
But do you remember when we analyzed an Ederson performance from two seasons ago against Spurs? I think City won like 4-1 or 4-0 or something. And when Tottenham went to press, they went long. So this isn't a systems failure so much as not knowing what to do when someone presses you. Surely you're supposed to play. Like when City pressed Norwich in that first game for the second goal, Norwich just dropped the ball into the space in the midfield. Now there was mistakes after that, blah, blah, blah. But my point being is, like, surely common sense comes into it. It's not on. Don't do it. I don't get it. They say the NFL is a copycat league. When some fashionable defense or offense comes into the league,
absolutely,
everyone does it. Premier League's being that right now.
Oh my God. This is the new standard of what a copycat league looks like to me. I just wonder, at some point, this is going to have to go by the wayside. Because clearly you are seeing there are players being asked to do these things that just, they just can't do it. I don't know. It's getting to like a breaking point, I think.
Speaking of breaking points, perfect segue. El Diablo Jr., what an awful performance the second half today. Absolutely shocking from Arsenal. I think it's time to part ways with Emery. He's all over the place tactically, and it's not working.
Well,
I don't agree with that.
I mean, look, this is a club that hung on to Arsene Wenger probably, what would you say, 2 years after maybe they should have.
Five years.
I was being generous.
Yeah.
So they're not. I don't get the sense that that's the way they're going to operate. Maybe to a fault. I guess that remains to be seen. But I don't know. That feels.
And then it was David Luiz, full Sideshow Bob, standing on a rake. Because it's one of the great scenes. There's just rakes everywhere, and he just stands on all of them. But the point being, you knew it was coming. Like Arsenal could have.
No, it's every week now.
It is every week
between him and Xhaka. They're like, people who want to give metrics to me? What's the metric on mistakes per game made by those guys? I mean, it's just like,
yeah. At some point, you do have to say tactics, formations, everything. If you make individual errors like that, you're never going to win a game.
Yeah. No, it's look. What do we think of Watford? You know, they had 31 shots in this game. Like, how was it 2-2? This probably should have been 4-2 or even 5-2.
Decore should have won the game.
How did he not score? How did he not? Like, that's what I'm saying is, like, this was Arsenal's performance against Watford in this game to come out of 2-2 is kind of how I felt as a Tottenham fan after the Manchester City game. And that's Manchester City. This was Watford. Yeah. Martin Keown said that, he said that to the BBC, Arsenal have already suffered 20 away Premier League defeats in just over two seasons, which is simply not good enough for a team that wants to make the top four. Emery has only been in charge for one of those campaigns, but the worrying thing is his side still have huge issues defensively, and they do not appear to be improving. In fact, they seem to be getting worse. Do you agree with that? Does this feel like it's actually regressing?
Oh, I don't think it's getting better. And I don't want to hear about Kieran Tierney coming into this team. Like, the guy is still a kid. He's a young defender. He's just making his bow in the Premier League. He's also not a central defender. He's not going to solve the middle of the park for them. Crazy. And by the way, Arsenal just have a plethora of brilliant defenders in the media lining up to take shots. It's just Dixon, Keown, Adams. I haven't heard from Nigel Winterburn yet, but I bet he's got something to say about that.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's ugly right now. Let's see. We continue, JJ. Other things happening around the league. It was the game that we were probably most excited for this weekend.
Our Manchester watch to United watch for
and,
was.
And Leicester City. Well, I think that wasn't a crazy thought for the United-Leicester City game to kind of be the one that jumped off the page to us.
It was rubbish.
But it was. United 1-0. They get a penalty in the eighth minute, which Marcus Rashford converts. And then kind of hung on. I guess the deal for Leicester in this one, unfortunately for them, they controlled a lot of possession. They played fairly well, but the final third, it was just, it just kind of all evaporated.
No cutting edge, and we thought they would have cutting edge. I think that's good for United. That's a really good signal for United that they are solid again at home. They weren't great attacking, but they still won the game. And Leicester, I was expecting a bombardment for the last 20 minutes. And really, it was right at the end when I think it was Ndidi had a volley that he sliced wide that maybe should have hit the target. But other than that, nothing in it.
No, not really. Yeah, it really was. That was supposed to be a fun game. We're seeing today, by the way, that David De Gea has received an extension at Manchester United. There was a lot of will he or won't he with that. And
I would imagine. I would say that is driven by his form and the fact that I doubt there's many suitors right now. People who were hot on him have probably cooled somewhere.
Right, like where? What is the if Real Madrid were at some point the natural landing spot? Well, they're not now.
No.
So you're right. Where's he going? I guess the good thing before we get off of this game with Manchester United is, you don't want to make too many excuses for a club of their size and their resources. But facts are facts. They're missing a bunch of key players in this game: Pogba, Martial.
That midfield worked okay, though. You know, it's not perfect. I still think when Pogba comes back, I hope Solskjaer will at least experiment with playing him further up the field. But yeah, they were missing players, and it's a good result.
Yeah. Spurs, they get exactly the result that they needed. They seemed, them and Liverpool, I guess, were kind of the clubs this weekend that like really gave the supporters what they were craving. Tottenham more so, just because where was morale a week ago? But now a 4-0 victory is kind of just what the doctor ordered. It was really the first game this season that they looked like what we maybe thought they would look like, and that was without Ndombele really having a role. He did come on as a sub. But I think the way you saw them moving in attack with Son and Kane and even Lamella, who's started really brightly this season for Tottenham, kind of under the radar, but Kane and Son more so, because when those two players are playing like that, that's when Tottenham become Tottenham. And you saw that the ball, Kane didn't get the goal, but the ball that he played into Lamella, it was perfect. And, you know, I guess the X factor here is there's a hole at right back. Nobody has really stepped forward to fill it just yet, but Serge Aurier in his first start of the season was excellent. Now, he has a little bit of that David Luiz in him where it's like, okay, when is the fatal error going to occur? But for what he gave them over the weekend in this game, who knows? Maybe he's at least deserved or earned himself a little bit more of a run to find out, okay, can he actually be the full-time right back for this club?
Can I jump ahead to the mailbag quickly? I'll bring this into the conversation rather than read it then.
Sure.
Cody Knorr has a question. It's really for you. He's from Berwick, PA. Is Son Tottenham's best player?
Boy, that's, I don't want to give a cop-out answer. I feel like my answer to that question changes like weekly. I mean, generally I say Harry Kane, but you know, he had kind of been in a run of form where it became hard to say him. You then wanted to say Christian Eriksen, but I don't know. He sometimes goes in and out as well. Son too, like as great. Son was their player of the season last year. Some people thought it should have been Sissoko, but Son technically won the award. Mm. So like, yeah, you're well within your rights to say that right now. I don't know. I still tend to lean Harry Kane. I just feel like when he's at his best, there's no one on the club better than him.
Okay.
But yeah, Son, like he's shown an ability when Kane isn't there that the ship keeps on moving. So like for him to be able to do that and just kind of seamlessly fill the role when Kane's out, yeah, okay. If you want to say Son, sure, I won't fight you on it. I won't even try to mount an argument.
You wouldn't be able to fight me anyway.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to our guy from Berwick, PA. And JJ, now we kind of wrap up our EPL section here with Everton and Bournemouth. Typically, they give us entertaining matches over the years. I'd say this one didn't really fall short of that. 3-1, it goes Bournemouth's way. Callum Wilson gets a couple goals. And Ryan Fraser, which I think there was some thought as to whether or not that would be an own goal. I think he was credited with that goal.
There you have it. School ground rules, he supplied the power. That was the way we used to do it.
So as long as you supply the power, any deflection on it doesn't matter.
We used to play a game called World Cup. So you had five or six of us out the field, one goalkeeper, the last person remaining. So you score a goal, you're out, you're into the next round. Score a goal, you're out, you're into the next round. But that causes problems because you're all playing against each other. And if you hit the ball off someone and deflects in, what happens? Do they go out? Do you go out? And so we decided to supply the power. And I think FIFA should take that.
You're right. I agree on all fronts.
Andrew phased out during my playground reminiscences.
Yeah, I did phase out there, JJ. I'm sorry. Something about the World Cup. It sounded all very, very prestigious and important. But I'll tell you what is prestigious and important. That is in the club.
Go, 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 Charlie. I'm in the club.
That's right. And for that today, we go in the club with Everton. Greg O'Keefe of The Athletic and the All Together Now podcast joins Caught Offside. Greg, what's up, man? How are you?
Hello, what's happening? I'll have a gin and tonic, please, mate.
Yeah, that's right. Love 50 Cent in the club. I guess let's start with this. And we'll, you know, full disclosure, we are not Everton supporters, so we're kind of, at least I'll speak for myself, speaking as an outsider, you know, they lose to Aston Villa, lose to Bournemouth. I mean, it feels to me like Everton is slowly, I know it's early, but it feels like they're slowly throwing away an opportunity in a year where it feels like the big six are not quite as dominant as what we've seen in past years. And I just wonder if that's kind of a similar sentiment as to what Everton supporters are feeling right now about how this season is coming.
Sometimes it feels like it was ever thus with Everton. You know, they've been poised or they've been in a position to maybe take advantage of the flux in the traditional top six in the last couple of seasons, and they've managed to shoot themselves in the foot and this season as well. Okay, it's too early to write them off by all means for the top six, but if you look at, you know, the fixture list, what it handed them in the early part of the season, I'm not gonna spew out the cliches of professional football managers about there being no easy games, but you know, they have faced sides like Bournemouth and Villa, Crystal Palace, you know, teams who Everton have spent a lot more than in recent years, and even in the summer just gone. And really, you know, they failed to capitalise on the opportunities. I have to say, you know, to draw at Palace and not really set the world on fire in the first game of the season was hard to understand. Villa, you know, Villa, they dominated possession and they were very lacklustre in the final third. They were too slow. They were relying on crosses into the box rather than going through Gylfi Sigurdsson. And, you know, it just was ineffective. Villa's central defenders were just eating up those balls and Everton were left exposed on the counter-attack. And then we saw again that happen at the Vitality Stadium against Bournemouth yesterday when, you know, the attacking play wasn't good enough, and despite the sort of abundance of riches that they have in attack, really, in terms of young, excited players, it just hasn't clicked consistently. And again, they conceded poor goals. I think some of it goes down to the inability to replace Kurt Zouma. He was a real success at Goodison Park last season. A defender with really great recovery pace. You know, if players, and they're left facing, there's so many fast young forwards in the Premier League at the moment, and teams can get in behind you. It'll happen to the best. But that's where you need really quick central defenders, and Zouma is that. It was a shame for Silva; he couldn't keep hold of him. But then, having had that, you know, it was always going to be difficult. He did decide to stay at Chelsea, so you have to wonder from a recruitment point of view, a lot of good things get said rightly about Marcel Brandt. He's a really impressive guy as a technical director. But why wasn't he replaced? You know, Michael Keane is a good traditional kick-and-headed centre-back, but he's not the quickest. And Yerry Mina, another big guy, very good at, very good at defending set pieces and attacking them. But we're yet to see consistency from him, and he's not the quickest either. So I worry about them against fast teams, and I do begin to wonder if they've let what should have been a good start. Like, for example, they could have gone third if they'd won on the South Coast yesterday. I wonder if they've let a potentially good start fade away.
Greg, I was going to ask you, what are the patience levels like amongst Blues fans with Marco Silva? But I'm going to ask him, I'm going to ask a much more basic question than that. And you'll know where I'm coming from. We've seen him at Hull. We've seen him at Watford. I can make excuses for Hull. I can make excuses for his time at Watford. Basic question, is, in your view, as a football fan, is Marco Silva any good?
Yeah. It's really difficult, and I'm not sitting on the fence here. I genuinely do feel conflicted. I love the way he sets up his teams to attack. I think they have a real, at their best, is to, you know, Hull, I think, of wins over Liverpool. You know, at Watford, I think at times they've beaten, you know, some of the big sides when he was the manager, before it all sort of went sour when Everton made their approach. And then Everton last season, you know, wins over Manchester United, over Chelsea. And I think that when it clicked, his attacking style of football is really, really effective. And I suppose why I'm hedging my bets is because defensively, I'm unconvinced. Now, that might be harsh, because actually, I think they kept clean sheets in towards the end of last season in a good number of games. Mm. They got to double figures, and you know, they looked like he looked like he'd found the answer, and it got to a really low point, going out to the FA Cup against Millwall and conceding farcical goals against what I would suggest a poor Championship side. It needed to improve, and I thought he had done, and now I'm seeing some of those issues maybe resurface. So, and I'm genuinely not, you know, journalistic kind of fence sitting here. I just don't know. There are so many good things to say about these teams, but I want him to prove consistently that they can defend before I sort of decide, in my own opinion, whether or not he's a manager capable of taking a team into top six and winning a trophy. And the latter is the most important to Everton, really, in my opinion.
Greg O'Keefe of The Athletic and the Altogether Now podcast joining us here on Caught Offside. Greg, I want to ask you, Fabian Delph let his feelings known in a pretty demonstrative way over the weekend, screaming, "Everyone is bleeping bleep," in a very lip-readable manner. Can you define for us who everyone is here? Who is letting down this club, in your estimation? Who is bleeping bleep?
No, I think, you know what, I love to see that. I mean, Everton have had a deficit of players who are willing to get in their teammates' faces, who aren't nicey-nice, who will deliver a few home truths and won't mind if it's on the pitch in front of the cameras. They're prepared to get people's backs up, to really try and a bit of needle, which you need. I mean, you know, you just can't have a dressing room where everyone's, you know, backslapping and high-five, especially not a team which has got so much potential and then has such a ability to flatter, to deceive. So I'm really pleased that Delph looks like a type of leader and a type of vocal player, maybe even a potential captain who's willing to do that, doesn't care about the cameras. He's playing a competitive game of football. He's watching teams. He's watching his team not perform away at Bournemouth, and he's going to say something about it. Now, this is a guy who's won Premier League titles with City. It's the type of mentality that you need. I don't think he was directing it at anyone individually. You can look at, you know, Michael Keane didn't cover himself in glory for one of the goals yesterday. Yerry Mina wasn't fantastic. At times, Seamus Coleman, who's one of the most experienced players in there, the captain, a wonderful right back for the club. At times, he was a little bit exposed, and in turn, it meant Richarlison had to track back and, you know, conceded a stupid free kick that led to one of the goals. So you can't point anyone out. Everyone had a bad day, really. Yeah, Gylfi Sigurdsson, again, one of the more experienced players, one of the club's most expensive players. Didn't affect the game. So you know, I don't think he was pointing fingers at anyone. I think he was generally just trying to let them know that it wasn't acceptable. And I'm, like I say, without overemphasizing the point, I'm pleased that someone like that is on the books now, because for too long, look, Phil Jagielka was the club captain for many years before he left in the summer. He was a brilliant guy, a really good defender in his prime. Talk about that recovery pace he had in bagfuls. Not the most demonstrative on the pitch, not one to rile his teammates, not one to get in referees' faces, and not one to lead vocally like that. He often led by example, but not one to do both. And Everton haven't had enough of it. So, you know, full steam ahead to Fabian for that. And I just hope he doesn't have to deliver quite so blunt assessments too often, because I want to see a reaction from what happened on Sunday. But more importantly, I want to see a consistent reaction.
Well, I delved into Everton Twitter last night, and I hope Gylfi Sigurdsson's mother and Sligo Rovers fans weren't on, because Seamus and Gylfi were getting pelters. Final one for me, Greg. So we've got a lot of Everton fans in the United States, and basically they kind of became America's team for a little while there, and I still think they're held near and dear to the hearts. Can you give us some speculation for the rest of the season? Some proclamations. Are we going to continue to see this kind of boom bust fortress Everton and then crap on the away days kind of Everton, or do you think we can get some kind of consistency?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what you're saying there about America's team. And so I, you know, as you know, the Athletic have just launched in the UK already an established website in the States, and it's been really refreshing and encouraging for me as a journalist and as an Evertonian. You know, I never tried to hide that I grew up as an Everton fan, to see that there is still a brilliant fan base for Everton in the US. There are still a lot of people who have come to the club through Landon Donovan, they've come to the club through Tim Howard, they've come to the club through maybe even Brian McBride. You know, maybe they just watched Creed. Maybe they just watched Creed and saw Tony Bellew. Whatever it was, they're Evertonians, and it's really nice to have that from the US. And I've seen, you know, a lot of nice comments from people who are reading the stuff at The Athletic. And I hope that Everton continue to grow their fan base around the world, but particularly the US, because those link-ups with really popular Everton players of the past. Can we all expect to see much more in terms of performances? They've got to. They've absolutely got to. They've, like I say, they've got a really good guy in terms of Marcel Brown at the top of the tree. You know, yeah, OK, he didn't get the centre-back that he needed, but there will have been reasons for that, and January is on the horizon. I really hope Marco Silva can do what he did last season, only sooner, address the problems defensively, find a way of making them solid again, so that they're not conceding silly goals, they're not losing concentration, they're not letting teams take three touches in the box from a set piece like they did against Bournemouth, and they can start winning games at Goodison Park, like you point out, when they're on point. There's not that many teams that can live with Everton. It's this away form which absolutely has us tearing our hair out. And Everton Twitter was an unhappy place to be yesterday. And sometimes you have to take a step back and realise you can't judge a fan base on the crazy stuff that flies around social media after a defeat, because otherwise every manager would last about a month and it would be Chelsea. But it is reflective of the frustration amongst us Evertonians, because we're desperate to see this club, you know, this brilliant club, achieve something. Finally, to maybe, the last time they won a trophy was 1995. You know, a lot of Evertonians weren't born then, rather depressingly. So they need to do something, and you know, they need to keep up with the clubs around them. And, you know, let's be honest, it's a difficult sort of arc at the moment, because Liverpool are tearing it up on a Saturday. And, you know, City had a difficult afternoon, but they're on a high. United are on a transitional season, but they're still probably going to be in thereabouts in the top six. And Everton are in the northwest with all these clubs, and they just need to hold their own and have something to shout about for themselves.
Yep. Well, Greg, good stuff, man. You were not bleeping bleep on the podcast today, and that is much appreciated. Have a good one. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Speak soon.
Good stuff from Greg O'Keefe of The Athletic and the All Together Now podcast, talking some Everton Football Club with us. He made one comment in there that I actually wrote down, because it's just become... He was talking about Everton,
yeah,
and he talked about how unconvinced defensively he feels. I feel like we've now entered a phase of really like soccer in general where you could probably take that and apply it to just anybody now. Like what is other than Liverpool? I feel like we are now in a state of play here with this sport where no one is good defensively, but yet you continue to pick on MLS for it. It's really everyone.
No, you might be right. And even if you look at Liverpool, Trent Alexander-Arnold, sometimes when he's going the other way and doesn't have the ball at his feet, he doesn't look great. So maybe we're entering an era. We say we're entering or we're in an era of bad defending. But maybe we're looking at rose-tinted glasses at the past, because everyone talks about Maldini, Baresi, the Italian defenders, Costa Corta, guys like that. Maybe they made as many mistakes, but they were in awesome teams.
I don't know. I wonder if there's just like we were talking before about how things are cyclical, and if right now like the scales are just kind of tipped in the attack's favor. I'll tell you what, if there was a time when it was all about defending and people took pride in that, this is so anti-proper football, man, but I'll sign up for this over that any day.
I'll tell you what, Andrew, you can just get outside right now and I'll fight you. Because guess what? You need big, grizzly, hard center halves, right? With no front teeth, and they boot it into row Z. And I'll tell you what,
that sounds like a lot of fun.
You can go and you can take your no defending, your Yankee Doodle Dandy takes on soccer, as you call it. Not round here, friend.
You know, soccer was originally an English term. People don't seem to know that.
I have no problem with it. I said soccer growing up all the time.
It's madness to me, though, that we're looked down upon for calling it that when it's really like the original.
Yeah, it's really not that that we're looked down upon for.
We are. We are inferior. We know less. Our brains are smaller. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, JJ, that beautiful music. That beautiful music. Yes, we will start to look at this week's Champions League action. Don't go anywhere. And back now on Caught Offside on a Monday, on a beautiful Monday. It really is just beautiful, JJ. You ready for the Champions League?
I am. I thought you were going to do a weather report there. Traffic and travel.
You already handled our weather beautifully earlier in the show, I thought, by saying something about September coming out like a lion. I don't even understand what it is you were trying to get across.
That's an actual phrase.
You're the defending champion of this competition. You must feel just on top of the world as this begins. Yeah. Everyone's looking up to you.
Yeah, not a bad group either. I'm not feeling great about facing Napoli again because they could have ruined the party last season. Very good side. But Group E, the reigning European champions, and no one will stop us.
I have said that Liverpool's most underrated big moment of the season was Alisson's save against Napoli in the final group stage match.
When you look at that save again,
and changed everything. Well, changed history.
They don't get out of the group even.
Right.
Incredible.
Right.
Yeah, and it's not talked about enough.
No, because of everything that subsequently, I mean, then they went and beat Bayern Munich and they turned it around against Barcelona. Like crazy, unbelievable things happened after that too. But people, none of it happens without that moment.
They were bad in the group last season. Well, I say bad. Bad away from home. Bad in Belgrade and bad in Naples.
Better save. Alisson's in that moment. Or Dudek's against Shevchenko in the final.
Dudek's,
I still don't know how he did it.
Dudek's is better because I don't know how he did it, and it was pure reaction, and it was closer in, I would think.
Like, you talk about keepers needing to have strong hands. Like, Dudek's hand, like, the ball hit his hand at full speed from, what, was it even 6 yards out?
Way closer, I think.
Moment, like maybe the best striker in the world, and the ball hits his hand at full speed from that distance and goes flying over the crossbar. His hand didn't even move.
Why has nobody given that the Matrix treatment where everything is slowed down?
It was unbelievable. Let's do a quick Champions League look here because by the time many of you are listening to this podcast, it may have already started. Just a couple questions here, kind of broad-based questions as the competition begins. Which group are you most intrigued by?
Group F, because of the sheer quality within Barcelona, Dortmund, Inter. I mean, that looks on paper like a really interesting group. Group G, for me, is the group of death because any of those sides can go through. Any two. Zenit, Benfica, Lyon, and Leipzig. And the other group that I'm curious about is Bayern, Tottenham, Olympiacos, and Red Star Belgrade. Because Tottenham, that's a fairly arduous road schedule for Tottenham. They have to go to Greece, not going to be easy. They have to go to Belgrade, not easy at all, even though not a great side, I will admit. And they have to go to Bavaria. I think that is interesting
it's
to
sneaky,
me.
Sneaky, difficult.
And also, maybe, because Chelsea are in such a transition, you've got Ajax and Valencia in there, and a Lille side that should not be underrated.
That is actually the group that I went with, JJ, Group H, but I went for entirely self-serving reasons. I went with that group because there are four Americans that will be taking part in the competition from that group. Do you want to try to name them?
Well, there's Dest.
Yeah.
There's Pulisic.
Mm-hmm.
There's Weah.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the other one?
And Alex Mendes, also with Ajax, also making their roster. Four Americans from that group. Obviously, Pulisic is the one that is probably set to have the biggest impact. I just wish Tim Weah could be healthy. It feels like there's opportunities for him at Lille, but if he's not healthy, he obviously can't take advantage of those opportunities. By the way, this is four of, I believe, seven Americans that are on rosters for the competition overall. There's also Ethan Horvath at Club Bruges, Tyler Adams with RB Leipzig, Gio Reyna with Dortmund,
which is
making that team for this competition.
Sorry, that is incredible.
And then there's this one that I'm really, really intrigued by. Not a player, but Jesse Marsch with Red Bull Salzburg in your group.
That is intriguing. I have watched him coach so much at Red Bulls, and I've often said it on this podcast, I love his sideline, touchline demeanor. He is so animated, yet really polite. You want to see the way he approaches the fourth official. Watch out for it. Even when he's angry, it's angered politeness. He's amazing. But I listened to an interview with him and Grant Wall, and he is not giving anything away. He has not changed in that regard. It's very much manager speak. But it's going to be
interesting. This is a big moment for him,
honestly.
It's
huge. He's in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Now, people will say, well, he was promoted within a larger organization. It wasn't like they handpicked him from somewhere else. But it's amazing to me.
Is he going to be managing in the Champions League? Then that's what matters. How he performs here, that's it. Like, that's doesn't matter how he got the job or why he got the job. He's got this opportunity now to impress a lot of people. So we'll certainly be rooting for him. JJ, any European giant out there that you're a little worried about?
Worried about European giants? I mean, based on domestic form, you worry a little bit about Real Madrid, the rumblings about Zidane, the fact that they're in a group that has PSG, maybe a banana skin away to Galatasaray and things get a bit hairy. Not really, Andrew. If we know anything about the Champions League groups right now, it's that increasingly the moneyed teams, the giants, get through. That's what we know.
Yeah, I would say this. On current form, Manchester City are fortunate that they're in the group that they're in. And I'm not trying to be overly demeaning of the clubs that are also in that group, Atalanta, Dinamo Zagreb, and Shakhtar Donetsk, because those are going to be difficult places for anyone to go to. Mm. However, it is hard to look at that and not see a way through for Manchester City. And like, if their defense is poor in the Premier League and Laporte is not coming back until probably sometime after 2020 begins, they're probably going to have poor defense in the Champions League as well. So they'll be vulnerable there. And I don't know if the other clubs in that group are of the quality where they'll really be able to take advantage or at least limit City's goal-scoring prowess going the other way.
There's a possibility of something going wrong at Juve. And it's not because of personnel per se. It's because the manager and the way he wants to play, the personnel is not suited to what he wants to do. Sarri and Juventus, there was the draw at the weekend with Fiorentina, 0-0, which was not a good result. They're in a group with Atletico, Leverkusen, and Lokomotiv. That could be something that goes wrong, but it won't be because of a roster. It'll be because there is a huge systems failure, meltdown, breakdown with Sarri and Sarri ball and all that goes with that.
The other one that I'm so curious about, probably the most curious about of any club heading into this competition, is PSG, because Neymar came back over the weekend, scored a brilliant goal. The fan base is not on board with him yet. They have turned against him. However, that will change. We know how fickle fans are. And if PSG start winning, and more so if they start winning games in the Champions League, and it begins right away because they start with Real Madrid this week, they will get back on side. And it feels like in terms of this specific PSG experiment that's going on, it feels like they're drinking a little bit in the last chance saloon here.
I think so.
Not to say that they're not going to continue spending, but in terms of like this Mbappe, Neymar, Cavani, now Icardi, like this iteration of PSG, this was supposed to be a squad that yielded major results in this competition, and it hasn't.
No.
So this could be it.
They've pushed all their chips to the middle of the table on that one. Can I give you one little piece from an article I read at the weekend by Jonathan Wilson? And I just want to get your take on it before we get out of the Champions League chat. Does any other competition that so regularly ends so brilliantly go through such a protracted clearing of the throat? Last season, only one side managed to eliminate a club with a higher annual revenue in the group stage. This is the curse of the competition. It is not just that there is a small cabal of super clubs far stronger than the rest. Dynamo Zagreb, for instance, have won the Croatian League in 13 of the last 14 seasons. In that time, they have totaled 4 points in Champions League group games. Lose the game, take the money, go home, win the league, repeat. Trapped on a mezzanine of futility. So he's just questioning what a lot of people were. And in fairness, I fought against it because I do enjoy the group stage. But the shocks are becoming less and less. And it is becoming more and more automated. There is the big money teams and they advance.
Yeah, I guess. To me, it's still worth it, though. For those nights when you get like... Who was it? That, I know Celtic aren't in this, but who was it that they beat a couple years ago? Was it PSG?
Well, they beat everybody. They didn't beat PSG.
Barcelona?
They've beaten Barcelona in the past, United, Juventus.
I mean, for those fan bases that don't get those moments very often to have that opportunity, you're right, rarely do they come through, but I don't know. I still kind of enjoy like the David Goliath situations that this competition can present. By the way, though, if you talk about long clearing of the throats before, like, I mean, it's kind of like, look at baseball. Like, baseball's postseason is thrilling and like breathtaking and edge of your seat. But you talk about a clearing of the throat, JJ.
Oh my God, it's an extended, absolute mucus fest.
So this for an American fan that experiences a regular season before, because essentially, like, this is the knockout is the playoffs. And the group stage is a regular season. So an American fan can relate to that.
Yeah.
Every one of our sports has the long clearing of the throat before the fun part. That's what sports are in this country. last but not least here, are you able to clearly identify a favorite? I'm having a hard time.
It's tricky. I think Liverpool are in a good position again.
Certainly.
And Barcelona will be at the business end. Manchester City, we talk about teams that need to go on a run, who are a project based on winning in Europe. Well, when are they going to start? Now, yeah. I guess.
You would hope, but yeah. I don't know. I was just saying a moment ago that maybe this City side is a little bit shakier than last year's chance. Last year's chance, who knows? We may look back at last year with that goal being ruled out for Sterling as the moment that like this could have been their moment, and that got in the way. Who knows?
Man. Yeah, true.
Like, what were Buffalo Bills fans saying after Scott Norwood missed that field goal?
We'll be back again.
And they were, but... it was never the same. Barcelona is kind of the one. I just feel like as long as Messi is there, I just feel kind of conditioned to say it. The problem is their performances so far this year, and we always talk about what does league success and Europe success, like, is there a correlation?
No.
I don't think there is. But like, it's just been so uneven. The 1-0 loss to Bilbao, then you come back with a 5-2 win over Betis, then a 2-2 draw with Osasuna, and you rebound from that with another 5-2 win over Valencia. So very uneven, but it's been without Messi. Messi will be back now for the Champions League, and you really, Barcelona more so than any other team in this competition, with the possible exception of Manchester City, I think have this propped up as, maybe, and Juventus would be in there too, but because Real Madrid have had so much success in Europe, Barcelona feel like they have to get one more.
Oh, absolutely.
And this could, who knows how many more great opportunities they'll have with Messi still in his prime.
And also with the Messi contract running down again and uncertainty about the renewal, one thing, Atleti have a real chance. I know they had the reverse at the weekend against Sociedad. They have a real chance with what they're building at that team to finally exercise the demons of 2014 and what was the other season they were in the final?
16?
Was it? I'm blanking. Whatever. Yeah. They have a chance to... It was 16. They have a chance to maybe put that right. Although, again, if they collapse in the league, maybe that bleeds into the Champions League. Who knows?
You're right. Who knows? I know you had mailbag next, but while we're talking Champions League, I'm going to go out of order here on the rundown. An unspoken rule that is rarely
transgressed.
Disobeyed. Yeah. What to watch for Champions League? Here are your games of note. Tuesday, 3 o'clock. I did put Ajax and Lille here because of the potential to see American players, although I don't know how many will actually play. Tuesday, also, all these games are at 3 o'clock unless I tell you differently. Dortmund and Barcelona in Germany. That'll be a fun one to kick things off in. What group was that again? That was Group F. Yeah.
Group F.
Tuesday, 3 o'clock, also Chelsea, Valencia. I just wanted to make a note real quick about Tammy Abraham. We didn't talk about this during our Premier League section, but a hat trick over the weekend against Wolves. Really scored 4 goals because he had an own goal, too. Not really his fault, but how about this stat? You ready? Tammy Abraham, JJ, joined Cristiano Ronaldo and Dele Alli in becoming only the 3rd Premier League player aged 21 or younger to score 2 or more goals in 3 straight appearances. That's an interesting group.
Read them again.
Tammy Abraham,
mm-hmm.
Ronaldo, and Dele Alli. Only 3 players aged 21 or younger to have 3 straight games in the Premier League of 2 or more goals.
That is weird to me because when you think, and he's fresh in my mind right now because he's promoting his book endlessly, Michael Owen. Michael Owen came in at, 17? And was a Golden Boot winner in the Premier League at a young age, and he didn't do that.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Definitely, yeah. He absolutely would have been a good guess had I made that a trivia question. Let's see. Tuesday, Napoli and Liverpool. They jump right back in it, those two right there. Now
well,
we
that,
move.
That depends on whether the paint is dry at the San Paolo Stadium because there's renovations going on there. And, of course, it's owned by the community, not by Napoli. And Ancelotti freaked out when he went into the locker rooms and said, none of this is ready. Paint, drywall everywhere. Workers' tools.
Is the field ready?
Oh, here we go. Proper football, Andrew.
I mean, then come on. What are we talking about?
Okay.
Let's see. We move to Wednesday now, JJ. This one is a 12:55, your early game, Olympiakos and Tottenham. So right out of the gate, Spurs going to Greece for their first Champions League match. Probably best to get that out of the way early, I would say. Wednesday, also, Atletico Madrid and Juventus. Lots of, a lot of the high-profile matchups happening straight away. Like this one, also on Wednesday, PSG and Real Madrid in Paris. And then finally, Manchester City begin their Champions League campaign against Shakhtar Donetsk on the road. Tough one there. While we're doing what to watch for, I will throw in a couple MLS midweek action that we have. Wednesday, 10:30, Portland Timbers and New York Red Bulls. The Red Bulls really with a tough loss over the weekend. Came back to tie it up 2-2 against Seattle, only to throw it away late, giving up 2 more goals to lose 4-2.
I was on Twitter as well while I watched that. The Armas Out Brigade.
Oh, really?
Big time.
Yeah. It doesn't help, I guess, that NYCFC right across town are having such a great season in a year where expectations for them were so low.
But their signings were really clever, and it's coming to fruition.
Yeah. Remember when everybody wanted to, when it was not Armas out, but Torrent out?
No.
I mean, look at that now.
The end of last season.
Yeah. You may be looking at your manager of the year with what's happening.
It's incredible the way it goes.
Him, yeah. And then Wednesday, 10:30, also the aforementioned Seattle Sounders against FC Dallas. We're getting near the end here. I was thinking maybe as a way of getting our MLS supporters more involved in the show, if maybe we do an MLS-specific mailbag. Because a lot of times we get MLS fans saying, you never talk about our club. You always talk about the same few clubs. And I get that. And you're right. So I think now as we're entering the business end of the season here as the playoffs are approaching, send us all of your MLS questions and we'll do it. We'll do what you want us to do.
Email them. CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com. Best place for us to collate them together.
Speaking of which, it's mailbag time. We'll end on this.
Okay, Atsio Soccer Pod, Caught Offside, ESPN on Instagram. Pepe's picks. Can we get a Sam version of Norwich City, a Sam where I would sing? But I don't want to do that, actually. Well, I'll do that as well. Norwich City. But it doesn't work because Norwich City don't usually and regularly beat Manchester City.
No, the thing about Psalms is that, Giassi Zardes, it's just, it's ingrained in the culture.
Yeah, it's like I went to church and I remembered all the hymns, and in the silent moments in my mind, I'd heard them so much, they were my screensaver, and I'd start humming them to myself like a total freak.
Right.
No, I will instead do a piece from the Bible, which is Daniel Farke. This is how an Irish Catholic priest would do it. And Daniel Farke reminds me very much of our Lord, because Daniel Farke had very little to work with, just as our Lord had very little to work with when he fed the multitude. And Daniel Farke fed the multitude, 27,000 at Carr Road, with a great amount of hope after a 3-2 win. Amen.
It's like he went to church with Dana Carvey. It's like straight out of Church Lady.
Is it?
That's exactly what he sounds like. Have you never actually heard Church Lady?
No.
You're doing like a dead-on impression of Dana Carvey.
God, I gotta look that up.
Yeah, I think you would love it.
Something depressing now, Andrew, because obviously. We received an email from Canada from a listener in response to Andrew's red card from a few weeks ago. And it was about Lukaku and the racism he endured. And this listener was forced to leave playing in his league, his soccer league, because of racial abuse and the league's inadequate response he felt when he made a formal complaint. And this is what he said, Andrew. And it just speaks to what you challenged people to do. I know that Andrew mentioned in the podcast that we should keep playing in defiance and stand up for ourselves. But to be completely honest, I am just not strong or brave enough to continue. I cannot just keep going while I see no evidence of any changes occurring in the near or distant future. That broke my heart when I read that. It was just so depressing. And, you know, we talk about Italy.
By the way, not to cut you off, I'm sorry. I feel awful hearing him say that he's not strong or brave enough. Like, as I sit here telling him what to do,
someone who doesn't have to deal with, so please don't.
Now I feel really,
don't
really
feel bad.
You are not a coward.
You're not.
By any stretch of the imagination, because you don't want to have to put up with something so hideous as that. Please, I hope you didn't take what I said that
no,
way.
He just, you were encouraging people to keep going is what you were encouraging people to do. It wasn't like you should just endure this and get on with it. And I don't think, look, I'm the same guy last week that said about Lukaku and the Curve of Nord, if I was Lukaku, I'd get on a plane and leave. Cheap talk from the privileged white guy sitting in the studio
of
with
course.
The microphone. Cheap talk from me. But I don't know how to say how I feel anymore, except that this is unacceptable. And I want you to keep playing, but why should you have to endure this stuff? I don't know.
My basic thought was, as this stuff happens, my hope is that society will move in a direction where these guys are getting exposed. Like, yes, it hurts to hear the words of these people in these moments, but like, they are becoming the outcasts, and the only way to identify the outcasts, unfortunately, is to go through this difficult period where this is happening. But I just hope that like, there's a snowball effect of society that we see this, and that it's just like, people are realizing that it's disgusting.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And look, I hope you enjoy our podcast and that it keeps you connected to soccer and that you get back on the field at some point. No one should be able to take away something you enjoy so much like that. Berrius09, please tell me JJ's heard Sadio Mane by Sheck Wes. I love all music, but this ain't it. For me, at least. Sounds like he watched a documentary or two, spent 3 nights in Liverpool on tour, and subsequently had a mini long-distance relationship with a Liverpudlian waitress. Curious your thoughts on this song. Question mark, he asks. Cultural appropriation. So let's play a bit of Sheck Wes and Sadio Mane.
I took a loss today, but I still wake up tomorrow. Put in danger on the pitch. It stays up on the kit.
Alright, okay, I think we get the idea here. So cultural appropriation. I don't know where Sheck Wes is originally from. I think he grew up in the Bronx, but at the end of the song he sings Le téléphone sonne toujours allo. So he's speaking French, which they speak in Senegal, so he may have a background in Senegal and has.
Okay, which would explain why he loves Sadio Mane.
By the way, this is not the first song inspired by footballers. Santan Dave, who is a big UK hip-hop guy, has a song called Thiago Silva. 22 million views on YouTube. Thiago Silva. Now, it's all these guys in Paris wearing PSG jerseys who sound like Arsenal fan TV with their London accents. And I'm thinking, is this a song, a hip-hop song, or is it a song really about the lack of quality centre-halves in North London?
Yeah, that's probably it.
Danny tweeted us, JJ Devani, tell me you saw the walkout today. So this is from Soccer America, and I did see it. In response to the ejection of an Emerald City supporters leader during halftime of Sunday's Sounders Red Bulls match for continuing to display an Iron Front flag in the first half of the match in Seattle, most fans behind the goal at the south end of CenturyLink, known as the Brougham End or Brougham End, walked out at the beginning of the second half in a sign of unity. So I did see that. And there's this weird picture of a massive, huge gap in the Seattle support, all empty seats, and this guy still waving a flag in the middle of it. One supporter who stayed on.
By the way, not to go back, but I just looked up Sheck West.
Yeah.
And he, I'm reading now from an article about him that he grew up on 116th Street and Lenox, right in the heart of a neighborhood that has come to be known as Le Petit Senegal.
Ah!
Little Senegal.
There we go. So I deduced like Colombo, where he was from, just like that.
There you go.
Le téléphone sonne toujours, alors, alors. Anyway, back to Seattle. Yes, I saw people leaving. I'll say I don't know why MLS has picked this fight. Most people, I would wager, did not know what the Iron Front symbol was. And to go after and eject people is going to cause problems. It's also going to cause a drop in atmosphere. And online, there was lots of Seattle fans tweeting saying, I've never heard the link so quiet. So, I don't know. It's tough...
Well, MLS has just drawn this line in this hard line stance.
I don't know what to say about it. I don't know what to... What else can be said? The fans are not going to let... Certainly the fans in the Pacific Northwest are not letting this go. They will continue to protest if you continue to deny them their what they see as their emblems in stadia.
And you wonder at what point players will start to get involved. Like we saw after the mass shooting, Alejandro Bedoya scored a goal for the Union and then ran over to an on-field mic and shouted into it something about, you know...
Yeah, end gun violence
right
now.
Like, players will involve themselves, and then MLS will be forced to react in some way.
They gave him, what was it, MLS Player of the Week or something?
And they didn't discipline him in any way for doing that.
But again, I mean, me and you sitting here as rational human beings, why would you? You know?
Well,
anyway, that's another argument. So that's the mailbag.
Oh, my God. That's And so it ends.
An abrupt end.
And so show ends.
Sometimes I run out of things to say.
Well, we will hopefully find more things to say on Wednesday when we expect to be back with another podcast in a midweek show, as it is a Champions League week. We ran through a lot of the big Champions League matches to get to, so there should not be a shortage of things to talk about. This was fun, man. This was a really eventful weekend. I mean, you won the league. My God, it's September, and already the league's been decided. It's crazy. Congratulations.
You are determined to destroy my dreams.
You've been waiting years for this. This is a great
thing. There are times I want to do a violence on you.
Really?
Yeah, times like this.
Get over yourself. Well, I'll tell you what, this was fun, man. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see
you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.